And hello, everyone. Welcome to the Open Sources Guelph Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
And I'm Judith Charlton Charlatan. An all-around fake Scotty Hertz.
Can't even insult yourself, right?
I can't even insult myself. Yeah, it's been a long day. It's been a long week. It's been a really rough week online as well as in the working world. But, you know, we'll get by. Just need to find my groove and just hide under a rock for a couple weeks.
I didn't realize this was going to open into a therapy session, but okay.
Yeah. Adam, I have something to tell you.
Here. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. I think I got them all. It's
all
catching.
All of the sources.
All that stress.
All of the places. Just you'll find us there.
All of Scotty's issues are encroaching on me now. Anyway, today we will catch up with the Ontario government and all their lawsuits. Yes, lawsuits, plural. And there was a new one this week. Does this change Ford's strategy of shock and awe legislating? And then we'll look out west, where there's pipeline troubles galore, although the feds own Trans Mountain now. They still can't get it built. So is Trans Mountain done? And will the Liberals pay the price? And then finally, Guelph City Council will be debating a motion to suspend certain provisions of the zoning bylaw when it comes to driveway width. Is it a slam dunk, or will a lot of people leave council that night disappointed? But first, speaking of disappointments, NAFTA, still no NAFTA deal, despite all the saber-rattling of last week with Friday deadlines and so on and so forth. And, yeah. Nothing's changed in the last 7 days, except I guess the rhetoric got ratcheted up to 11. If it wasn't there already, because I think the sort of the most damning part happened after we did the show last week with this off the record comment Trump made to Bloomberg that was reported by the Toronto Star's own Daniel Dale. That Trump
yeah,
said,
quite the scoop for the Star.
Yeah, it was a big
scoop.
Bloomberg. I was going to say the best part, but not the best part. One of the more interesting parts was Daniel Dale shared a lot of the, let's call it feedback he got from Trump supporters after printing.
Well, I'm sure that was rich. I didn't actually see it.
But, yeah, he posted some screen grabs on Twitter.
Oh, I'll have to catch up. Yeah.
But long story short.
I thought my week was rough online. I'm sure his was just yeah. Every week.
It wasn't a great week. Donald Trump said that Canada is going to have to take the deal America gives them, and NAFTA is going to be negotiated on America's terms, which to me just says everything about Donald Trump and Donald Trump's perspective. I think his deal making abilities have always been predicated on the core principle: I get everything I want, and you get nothing you want, and that's his idea of a great deal. And I think it's right there in black and white in Daniel Dale's piece.
Yeah, Canada's being gaslit by a champ, I think, for sure. Trump's also like, oh, there's no political necessity to keep Canada in NAFTA, but it's, you know.
Except Mexico saying, keep Canada in NAFTA. The head of the AFL-CIO in America
says. That's the thing, right? And I wouldn't say everybody, but yeah, as you said, the unions, Mexico, people in Congress, both Republican and Democrat, are like, you know what? We actually need them. And, you know, Trump's talk about, well, we're just going to cancel it or we've got this new deal. That can't actually happen because Congress needs, if I understand it right, the American Congress needs 6 months' notice. There's actually a length of time or whatever. Hey, maybe that whoever's hiding the paperwork on Trump is going to hide that one too. We don't know. That's another evolving story. It was like, holy cow.
Well, I mean, that's blown almost everything else
to the
side is the – Bob Woodward book.
Yeah. Every week there's a small explosion out of the White House. And sometimes it's even bigger. But yeah, and, you know, businesses, farmers, it's everybody seems to want, you know, doing a new deal with NAFTA, fine. But it sounds like all of the parties, the majority of the parties, want Canada in. And I heard a bit of Chrystia Freeland talking, and you know, she's playing it cool. She's doing the whole "we don't want to negotiate" in the media, but she was praising the American negotiators.
Mm-hmm.
She obviously didn't say anything about Trump. However, Trudeau did. Trudeau actually came out quite critical of Trump on Wednesday. He said, "You know, well, this we really need the Chapter 19 dispute resolution, which is something that Trump wants to get rid of outright, and just make you know judges in the U.S. decide who gets what."
Mm-hmm.
And Trudeau said that since Donald Trump likes to break the rules, DT, you're not going to like that too much. Prepare the Twitter feed.
Well, I mean, it'll be a remix of, you know, yeah. Justin Trudeau, good guy, but Canada's taking advantage of us.
He's worthless. Yeah.
You know, we got raw deal in Afghanistan. I mean, first of all, raw deal, he keeps talking about how America's been hosed in a North America free trade agreement. They have a debt surplus over us of $8.6 billion out of like $65 billion in trade. So, I mean, in terms of like large-scale international trade in the, you know, several zeros range, you know.
Worst deal.
$8 billion. I mean, $8 billion is probably as close as you get to quits, you know, before you start nickel and diming.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this today, and it occurred to me, you know, who in Canada negotiated the original free trade agreement? What government was that? It was the Conservatives under Brian Mulroney. And does everyone remember what happened after they closed the deal on NAFTA? Remember what happened to the Conservative Party? How much NAFTA was hated by people? And I mean, this wasn't the only reason the Conservative Party collapsed, but I mean, it was definitely the beginning of the end for Brian Mulroney and for the original Federal Progressive Conservative Party. You know, there was huge protests against the free trade agreement, the original free trade agreement. Everyone thought America was going to eat our lunch. And the fact that, you know, now the President of the United States is like, look at this country of 30 million people. They're totally taking advantage of us.
Yeah, and in those days, too, it was like the Turner liberals running against it, like coming out completely, oh, no, we can't do this. Days have changed, obviously, now that 30 years, 30? I guess it is 30 years have passed since...
Yeah.
The original free trade agreement.
Original recipe.
Now NAFTA. Yeah, the original recipe. Obviously some changes over the years, but these are the most radical changes coming down the pipe that we're probably going to see. And it's so interesting to me, too, how we talked about it before about the U.S.-Mexico deal, or we don't even call it a side deal. It's just some kind of deal.
Yeah,
and how Trump is so happy with that.
Yeah.
Yet he's always on about the wall, and you know, his outright racism comes out when he's talking to the, to his people, I guess, about the wall we're going to build. He loves that line because it gets the biggest cheers at his rallies.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, this is what I was saying earlier about the gaslighting. So we just beat on people, and then all of a sudden it's like, no, I'm really your friend. We've done a great deal. So they're in talks this week. The artificial deadline that Trump put on it just kind of passed, and he didn't actually chime in on that, did he? It was just kind of like,
no,
it
came and went, and then the team sort of said, okay, see you after the long weekend, and they
can
were
we
back
talk
out
next
on
week
Wednesday.
Yeah, sure, yeah. We'll see you, just come back. Okay, so
yeah
it was some of the other things too. We mentioned Chapter 19, of course. Supply management is very high on the radar that America, or at least Trump and many Republicans, have a hate on for our supply management system, which, as far as I understand it, Trump and the liberals will go to the mat to protect. I believe so. There's a little bit of a loosening. It sounds like the percentage of American dairy that can come up here is going to increase. At least that's what they're offering up. And something else very interesting, too, that doesn't always get mentioned is the cultural exemption.
Yeah.
In that it sounds like the U.S. wants to have the ability, say, Trudeau used the example of CTV. He obviously didn't use CBC, but he said, you know, CTV was for sale. Should an American company be able to purchase that and just run it American style? Now, granted, there are a lot of
American, a pretty good job running it American style.
Well, that's the thing. There's a lot of American show. If you're just talking about shows on any of the channels, they just pick up.
I saw CTV advertising one of their new fall shows. It's called Magnum P.I.
Yeah. And it's not...
Great Canadian show, Magnum P.I.
It's not filmed in Guelph pretending to be Miami either. It's actually... Or maybe they filmed it in Vancouver. Who knows?
They film fake, it in Hawaii, yeah, or at least it looks like Hawaii.
Get some palm trees or something. But yeah, I'm not sure if that request was made of Mexico. I haven't been able to find out. I know there are lots. There's the Fox, Mexico, isn't there? I'm pretty sure they have inroads there. I could be wrong, but
well,
I don't think in terms of, and maybe it's a language thing too. Like I can't see Canada giving it up just simply because of the structure of the CBC is so ingrained now. Obviously, we all agree it could use some work,
right?
But I don't think they're going to give up the national.
Well, it's not even just broadcasting. I mean, that's almost like the old model of it. It's more about the infrastructure that those companies own, which is, you know, the cable and the
Rogers,
phone lines, yeah, and the satellite and
the cell phone
towers.
Yeah.
And that is appealing to a lot of people because our cell phone prices, our data plan prices
are too damn high.
Well, no, they are too damn high in most of the rest of the developed world. It's among the highest.
Yeah.
And you know, you go online to a lot of forums, you will hear a lot of people complaining about it. So there may be some sentiment that can be exploited. People who wouldn't mind seeing American telecoms come in here if it meant they would get cheaper cell phone plans.
Oh, yeah, definitely. A lot of people would be for that. And so, and if that unraveled, I mean, it's supposed to be, but it never really was.
I mean, CTV and Global will be an afterthought is compared to that.
Yes, but I mean, they have interest in that, too, in terms of the, let's call it the empires that they own, right? Because they really do.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, Trudeau didn't mention CBC, but I mean, you know, if that's up for grabs as well, I know there's lots of people here in Canada that would like to see the CBC go, why do we pay $1 billion for this? And with an E, I don't know. Right? You're right. It's not just the shows, but it is the shows too. But
it's,
my goodness, if they get rid of Coronation Street, there'll be riots. If there's anything
that put
people into the streets, it'll be.
That's like.
But you can stream it online on. Well, it's on CBC, but commercial free streaming online. I feel like I'm doing a plug.
If you want it, you can find it, and we're still months behind, but that's fine. Yeah. It seems sort of weird that the cultural exemption came up because I'm wondering what's going on in the negotiating room, because you're right, we don't know what's going on in sort of like blow by blow, what the proposals are, but at least the people in power, Trudeau especially, started talking about the cultural exemption. So I'm wondering if there's some movement there, if that's one of the concessions that Freeland is talking about in order to protect the supply management side, or to try and get concessions on Chapter 19, the dispute resolution, if this is the bauble they're offering up. It's like, okay, because, I mean, let's face facts. American companies do have inroads in Canadian media. Look at Post Media, which is owned by a Texas hedge fund.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's, yeah, Post Media is a Canadian company, but their paychecks are coming from, you know, being managed by, you know, when you hear about cuts at Post Media, that's who's demanding the cuts.
It's fairly clear when you read it.
Right.
Which isn't often.
Right.
I only read it when somebody sends me a link, and even then it's like, I don't know.
But
I just see Conrad Black's face, that's all. Anyway.
Yeah, well, a lot of people see that face in their nightmares, but that's neither here nor there.
I'll tell you about my Donald Trump nightmare. I'm off the air. That's bad. I think I need a vacation from the show. No. Just life in general.
Keep dreaming, because the news keeps happening.
I know.
Speaking of news that keeps happening, I don't think we've touched the Ford government in a while.
Much has happened in the
so
past
much has happened
24 hours.
So the latest was that ETFO, the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario, became, I think, the third group that is suing the Ford government over repealing the 2015 sex ed curriculum, or I should say the health curriculum, of which the sex education portion is a part of the overall health curriculum update. We sometimes forget that. It's this big thing about health, and we focus on this little slice of it, which is the sex ed curriculum. But so it's the ETFO. There was the family members, including one Guelph family who have children who identify as LGBTQ, who are suing sort of on their own. And then there was the Canadian Civil Liberties Union as well, suing over that. That is also part and parcel with the City of Toronto suing an injunction to stop the cut of half its city council. You have the decision in favor of Tesla that the grace period for rebates get to be included for Tesla, people who bought Tesla products. And then you have, of course, the Ontario government launching its own lawsuit against the federal government to stop the initiation of carbon tax levies. And that one, the Ontario government's put aside $30 million for next year. And in which the PC government of Manitoba actually has decided they are not going to become part of that lawsuit because it's pointlessly political.
Litigation. What a way to find, find that money you were looking for. Find the efficiencies. The FO challenge, is reading a bit up about that. And I guess it's a charter challenge, right? The mm-hmm. illegal repeal of the sex ed. And of course, the rat line in itself, I think, is probably, I'm not sure of the specifics of that. It's one of the freedoms challenge in there. So yeah, and the Tesla won outright, didn't they? It was just like, that seemed to happen very quickly. It's like we need to be included in this. Quite the amount of litigation coming down the pipe, right? But there's also, I guess, a ton of other things happening too. I don't know if we can condense this all into 15 minutes or so, but just this week, a bunch of Liberal appointees that from the past few years or whatever, the Ford government, I think they're pretty much deciding to undo anything the Liberals have done that is easy to undo, and I'm sure the harder stuff will come later, is being undone. There was several appointees removed. The person, his name is Howard Sapers, who was put into corrections reform. Former Supreme Court Justice Frank, it's Iacobucci, right? He was on the Supreme Court, he was their Ring of Fire negotiator with the Liberals.
Right.
And ex-minister David Colinette, do you remember that name, was on the High Speed Rail Advisory Committee. Now getting rid of him, and I suppose Iacobucci to some degree, makes you wonder where things like the direction of the Ring of Fire and the direction of High Speed Rail, because we've been talking about High Speed Rail for years and years and years. Who the heck knows what the conservative plan will be? I know that locally there are some hopes up that high speed rail will be something that happens here, but if you're sort of picking apart the advisors, I guess, of the people involved with that, also the advisor for the guaranteed income,
right,
was removed as well.
Yeah, so that's the other lawsuit I didn't.
Which yes, exactly. Yeah, that's where I was going to go earlier about the pile of lawsuits. Now, the Basic Income Project itself, they're calling it the compassionate wind down, not the killing of it, which I mean, they're killing it off. So by, I think it's, they've got until March 19th, or not March 19th, March 2019, to that program will exist. And then that is supposedly enough time for the people on the program to transition to more proven support programs. No specifics given as to what those programs are, except they did say that, well, you know, if we kept this basic income, the HST would need to be 20% to maintain these programs, which I don't know where they got that number. There was no link or anything as to why it would have, the HST would have to be 20% to support.
It's the same as the 25 million that we're going to save by cutting Toronto City Council in half. Where does that number come from?
Yeah. If you said, here's the paper, somebody did the accounting. I'd be more impressed with that, but you know, to say that the HST would need to be 20% to support a basic income program is just ridiculous in my view. So we got all this stuff, just, and they're not even back in yet, right? Like, when's the next?
Yeah, I don't think they're back till sitting. Late September.
Yeah,
it's. I mean, Meanwhile, we should say that instead, in lieu of Ford Fest this year, Doug Ford had a bunch of young conservatives to his mom's house, which sounds kind of bad. But then you add Jordan Peterson to the mix.
Oh, yeah. The Jordan Peterson barbecue.
Right.
Oh, that's another thing, the sort of the free speech.
The free speech, which is speech. So
Jordan Peterson is sort of in the background there. It's like, I know this is going to go.
It's so ass. Because Jordan Peterson himself had a lawsuit thrown out. He was trying to bring a lawsuit to... against Wilfrid Laurier University for the whole Lindsay Shepherd thing where she was suspended or...
Kerfuffle?
It's
total kerfuffle.
But he brought a lawsuit against Laurier, I guess, trying to get a piece of that action. And the judge basically said, look, you weren't hurt by this. You were actually enhanced by this. So, you know, shoo-shoo. Go back to your $1 million a month Patreon. It's... So, you know, it's
sunshine Lister.
I borrowed the phrase shock and awe when we were talking about the bottom at the beginning of the show. But that's kind of what it is that he came into the power. He's like, everything the liberals have done is wrong, so we're going to take it all back, which is sort of what Trump did as well, you know.
Anything Obama?
Candid,
Obama brand on it, the
right?
Obama name,
and then how Obama stinks on it,
yeah,
so to speak. But you know, it goes to show the short sightedness of this because, and also his own words coming back to haunt him, because they mentioned Tesla prominently in the rollback of the rebate for electric cars. Is that, you know, all these millionaires driving their Teslas, and then the judge's like, okay, well, clearly you're targeting Tesla in all this, so, you know, and the rationale, of course, for not including Tesla in the grace period for the rebates, because they don't have dealerships in Ontario, and, you know.
Yeah, it's essentially, I was going to say a mail order car. We just ordered on the internet, right?
But yeah.
You can order any car on the internet.
So it's, you know, the things like guaranteed income, guaranteed basic income, were on the campaign trail. They promised they were not going to cancel the pilot. And then they come in, cancel the pilot, and say, okay, well, clearly it wasn't working. It's like, well, how do you know? This was a pilot program to get the data to find out if it would work or not. And that's sort of the basis that class action lawsuit is taking. And you hear some of the sad stories, and there's a Twitter feed, I think it's called The People of Basic Income, and it's also kind of like an art project too. But, you know, in terms of how people's lives were affected by being part of the pilot, you know, there was a woman who was able to buy a new walker. There was another person who was able to move out of their, you know, dingy manor style pay by the day motel and get an actual apartment. No disrespect to the manor.
It took me a second there. I was like, oh yeah, that manor.
Yeah.
Not like Lord of the Manor. Yeah. My manor style.
Right. And
that's the way they like to spin it, though, is that it's too socialist, right? It's like you're just giving people money and they're not doing anything.
But well, of course, you know, not what they listen. Were doing with it was making a better life for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. But and incrementally, too, though, it's not as if they're showering. It's like that meme making the rounds, you know, the refugee's full fridge and then here's the empty fridge of the average worker.
Hate those.
But
I
that's
hate those
it,
so
you
much.
Know, the logic is similar, too, though, right? It's these people are getting something for nothing, but they're actually living very lean, you know, like right on the edge. In fact, it's not as if, yeah, it's obvious that they don't like evidence. Cause I didn't mention it. Another one of the, or did I say it? The, one of the advisors that was let go, whose name escapes me, was the climate change advisor.
No kidding.
And, yeah. So considering they're not supposed to mention climate change anywhere in any of the, like, was that just an internet rumor? That does sound like the kind of thing. I was never able to confirm whether that was official.
It was
like,
a story.
The departments can't mention climate change.
Right. I think, well, it was fervently denied. But it was something that BlogTO had, and they were given, like, insider emails. Mm. But I don't think anyone's independently
official.
Confirmed it.
Like, so I don't when think Catherine McKenna comes anywhere. By, they and they just kind of scratch out the climate change part on her title there. And she
well, I mean, the minister, we've gone back to the Minister of the Environment, not the Minister of the Environment and Climate Change in Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
That title doesn't exist anymore.
No, because it's not real, right? If you erase it, if you don't talk about it, it's not there.
If you don't talk, well, speaking of not talking, I mean, that's to go back to sex ed. I find that this is an interesting development in the midst of all this. Is Lisa Thompson, the Minister of Education, has been utterly and completely unavailable to talk on this subject.
It's busy.
Yes.
Cottage, maybe?
For the last 3 weeks, because there's a
she's
CBC reporter who's tweeting every day, like, today I submitted a request to do an interview with Lisa Thompson. I haven't heard anything back. And you know, it's...
She'll blame her PA. She'll blame her admin or something. There was a mix-up.
She'll blame Kellyanne. but, you know, you're kind of the face of this, and it makes you wonder, like, is she a scapegoat? Because she was, like, originally the critic for agriculture, mm-hmm. so she doesn't really have a background in education, so why is she education minister if she wasn't, like... sort of like a lamb to the proverbial slaughter once they started doing this. I mean,
and of course her parliamentary assistant is Oosterhoff or whatever.
Sam Oosterhoff, who I will say again, doesn't know anything about education since he was homeschooled. I mean, the institution of education. He doesn't know anything about that, and he probably doesn't know anything about sex because he was homeschooled by Christians. I'm just saying. I think there's probably some episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer that are too racy for Sam Oosterhoff, even at the age of 20.
He secretly watched them in the basement of Queen's Park, probably, learning all the important life lessons.
There are episodes of
the old school sex ed.
There are episodes of Dawson's Creek that are too racy for Sam Oosterhoff, but
Sesame Street, probably.
Sesame Street.
Did he have TV? We don't know. We should get him on. I'd love. Oh, we gotta get him on. We have to get him.
You
on
think
the
they'd
show.
Give him up? They're not giving up Lisa Thompson. They think
up. Maybe we go at it from a different tack. You know, I don't know. All are welcome, by the way.
Yes, that's true. We have a very
an open invite to open sources always.
That's
if you want to come on and say, I heard you correct. Fellas, and I.
I also wanted to mention Buckabeer, which seems to have fizzled.
That's all he heard wherever he went. Doug Ford, Buckabeer, Buckabeer, Buckabeer. He actually said it three. It's the three times thing. It's like when Trump says very, very, very. Buck a beer.
But it's interesting, and somebody online pointed out that like the two companies that took part actually have a bigger interest in up getting a piece of the private pot retail, including President's Choice, which of course owns Shoppers Drug Mart, who are very interested in getting a piece of private pot.
The Conservative Friends, perhaps?
So, I mean, so the people who took part clearly had a political
motive. And
cool.
I've only ever seen like bottles of Kool just lying by the side of the road. I've never actually seen anybody drinking it. So seriously,
well, it's not exactly
on the ride home.
Not exactly.
I see Nestle bottles and bottles of Kool. So somebody
it's not exactly on tap at the Welly, no, is what we're saying.
Somebody who likes a traveler in this neighborhood drinks Kool or liquor. But
well,
to each your own. You know, you want cheap beer, pricey beer. It's a free market, right?
It is a free market.
Whether we like it or not.
We're going to take a break. And why don't you take this opportunity to get a cold one yourself?
I need to get something. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, you're listening to Open Source as Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we'll be back after a brief moment. So the next topic of interest, Trans Mountain.
it's always followed by an evil cackle, Trans Mountain.
Well, there's actually an interesting article in Maclean's.
You didn't see the eyebrows goes up.
It occurs to me, you don't hear that turn of phrase very much anymore.
It's only 12 of them a year now, that's probably why.
Well, that's true, although I think Rogers is having an announcement about selling something. It could be. Who knows. But in Maclean's, Chris Turner, who is a well-known author on matters of the environment and especially the oil patch, his probably most famous book is The War on Science, which is about the Harper years and their war on science, especially in regards to oil. But he did like kind of a breakdown of how Trans Mountain became so political. And he opened by talking about this pipeline I had not heard of, called the Alberta Clipper, which takes oil from the patch to, I think, a refinery in Wisconsin. But it got built in like 4 years. It was like approved in 2008, and it was up and running by 2012. I mean, it's not anywhere near as
did it say distance-wise how far that? I'm trying to picture that. I mean,
no, they didn't say it.
It doesn't traverse mountains, and well, I suppose
but
it doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't traverse sort of mountains, like, and doesn't end up at killer whale spawning grounds.
Yeah,
but it's interesting to note how Trans Mountain, when that came forward in 12 or 13, and Chris Turner notes this, is that it became a political hot potato because that was about the same time that the Harper government went total war on anyone who was opposed to pipelines. And so they sort of heated up the situation and became, and Keystone XL was also, hitting a brick wall at this time because Obama was failing to green light it on his end. So Trans Mountain became the next thing, and because of the Harper government's total warfare on anyone who was curious about the patch, or anyone who was
for us or against
skeptical
us,
yeah. against, yeah, mm-hmm. it was the for us or against us mentality, yeah. and of course the reason why this is interesting is because there's a bit of a ping pong match going forward about who is to blame for First Nations not being properly consulted, and the conservatives are saying not us, and the liberals are saying it's the conservatives. So I mean, it's
then they'll just both blame the First Nations somehow,
right? And the political right. fight is interesting now. Is what I'm getting at. I think that it's very difficult to see this thing getting made, at least in the short term.
Oh, for sure. For those that don't know, and you probably do, the appeal court ruling that shut this down completely for now was that Ottawa didn't adequately consult the First Nations people on this project, particularly I think the Squamish Nation commented saying, well, we had lots of our concerns addressed, lots of them were unanswered, and then the final report reflected absolutely none of what we said. So this is one of this is one of the key yeah. the key issues. Like, we did all this talking, they heard some of it, they didn't hear other parts of it, and then there was the end result was nothing. Trudeau's still talking like it's still happening. It's in the natural interest of the national interest of the country, but he says he's going to do it the right way, and they're not going to resort to tricks. Mm-hmm. So was he like Slytherin or Hufflepuff when he was in school? I don't know. It's like, just the way he said it. I'm like, okay, we're like,
Trudeau.
It's pure trickery.
Trudeau was total Hufflepuff.
Yeah, and Rachel Notley. Bit of a political survival game going on in addition to everything that's going on. She's had to tack right on this one for sure. For all the progressive things that have been happening in Alberta, this one is like could be is right out of the conservative, United Conservative, whatever the heck conservative they are, playbook. But yet we've got Jagmeet Singh this past week saying just out and out Trudeau has to end the Trans Mountain expansion plans. So this, it must be weird for, if I've got it right, I think the NDP are still the only party where you just belong to all of it, the provincial wings, right. the federal wing. And here we have two wings essentially not going at it tooth and nail, but
take these broken
wings. Yes, take these broken wings and put your party back together. So, and then there was one of the headlines on CBC from an opinion person was like, get ready for Premier Kenney. His election isn't too far. Was it May 2019? Mm-hmm. Like, it's on the horizon. And of course, they're saying, well, don't count Rachel Notley out yet, but this will be the issue, right? I think, unless you talk to somebody from Alberta and see what the actual real issue is, but this is very much on the radar.
I do question her rationale to say, like, oh, well, until you get this pipeline situation sorted out, we're not going to do any carbon tax stuff. It's like, it's not going to save you from Kenny and the UCP coming for you on that. They're already painting you as like to the left of Stalin on when it comes to carbon tax. It's
and yet sending a shout out via tweet on Labor Day to her friends at Imperial Oil who joined them in the march. It's like,
right,
what? That's just strange,
right? She's like,
that isn't like cohesive with the NDP on any planet, but except planet Alberta.
Right. And there's a situation analogous to this to like Democrats in the United States Senate right now who are thinking about voting for Brett Kavanaugh, thinking that it's going to sow their Oates as, you know, sort of states people, as people who can, you know,
need to make a
go
mark.
Along and, you know, work in a bipartisan manner. It's like, yeah, you can vote for Kavanaugh until you're blue in the face, but, you know, it's not going to stop any attack ads that you're like a secret liberal that's taking secret orders from Nancy Pelosi. And it's the same thing for Rachel Notley. It's not going to stop any attack ads next year that she's like a stark raving liberal that wants to, you know, stuff potatoes up your tailpipe and burn every oil field. It's
sorry, yes. That just left me with a vision there. Like, ah, yeah.
It's not. And so what she should have done is take the high road. It's like, look, Ottawa, we're holding up our end. We're enacting this carbon tax. We have a lot of people in Alberta skeptical. We have a lot of people in Alberta who are really wanting to get to work on this and want to, you know, have a good job, have a good living. And you guys are, you know, not helping us out in this regard. And that's sort of what, you know, there was a piece in the National Post I was reading talking about, you know, typical sort of Western alienation and how this whole pipeline thing can play into that. The difference being this time there's also a tension between BC and Alberta, so there's really no kind of Western United Front. But if you
also an NDP government.
Also an NDP government.
Minority.
But if you think that Jason Kenney isn't going to play into that whole Western or at least Alberta alienation thing next election, that you know, progressives in Ottawa are not letting Alberta sell its oil and make its money, and you know, it's Alberta oil money that helps out the rest of Canada, including Leeches and the Maritimes and Ontario and Quebec
provinces that should just be shut down.
Right.
Yeah, and you can count probably how many times Kenny's going to mention the National Energy Program of 40 years ago and Pierre Trudeau Sr.
Oh, yeah.
As if his ghost is just floating above everything that Junior does. And I mean, I suppose that's a little bit true to some degree, but not the way that it's implied.
I thought
it's
Trudeau like, was in Trudeau Sr. was in Kenny's closet. How can he be in two places at once? How can the ghost of Pierre Trudeau be in two places at once? ghost powers,
Jason,
I guess.
Jason, I have something to tell you. Yeah, in the middle of the night.
It's
Trudeau's probably my
closet. I'm sure Trudeau's ghost is actually in a lot of conservative closets. It just seems to me that. Also, you mentioned Jagmeet Singh, who's got like a ton of problems of his own, because even Tom Mulcair's going on TV and going like, hope he has a plan. And of course, there's that news
that,
last
but I'm
week.
I'm not surprised, yeah.
Well, I may have exaggerated for effect, but I mean, it was basically...
That's exactly what he said.
That was the subliminal read. But it was announced that the NDP is having trouble raising money, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... They have to get their messaging strict on this, because they have a message from the feds, they have a message from BC, and they have a message from Alberta, and never the tween shall meet. And that is going to be really freaking hard on a first-time leader like Jagmeet Singh. I mean, despite all Trudeau's troubles, that you know, I think they were probably going to take a hit at West anyway, just because of the backlash of Trudeau now not being the fresh face, of now being the face of the establishment.
Mm. Being the oldest leader.
He's the believe oldest it or leader. Not. Well, not discounting Elizabeth May.
Of course.
But anyway.
Yes. Okay.
It's
we'll
just,
include her.
They,
I'll let her.
We'll let her in. oh, Lordy, I'm off my point.
Sorry.
But man. No, sorry. But it's just that the Liberals are going to be... We're inevitably going to take a hit in Alberta just because of that backlash. And especially if Kenny and the UCP, I almost say UPC, but I mean UCP.
It should have gone with UPC.
end up taking power, which does seem likely, not necessarily guaranteed, but I would say likely.
Well, they'd like to think so.
So, I mean, that's the flip side of it, too, is like Mulcair's looking at Jagmeet Singh and saying, I hope he has a plan. Well, I think a lot of people are looking at Trudeau and saying, I hope you have a plan. And actually, people have been asking Amarjeet Sohi, the Natural Resources Minister, like, well, I hope you have a backup plan. And he was kind of playing coy about it, which suggests to me is like he's went back into his office and said, we need to come up with a plan fast.
Either that or I'm not going to be available for comment. We don't know.
Well, he hasn't gone Lisa Raitt radio silent yet. Or Lisa Thompson.
Yes, all the Lisas. But yeah, and it's
there are a lot of Lisas in the Conservative Party.
When you're talking about Jagmeet Singh having a plan, but the plan would seem to be to run in the West, which is right. And that's another thing too. We've totally strayed from pipelines, but of course, all of this plays into every single chess piece move for this sucker. So
right, and
stall. How long?
The Liberals,
in 5 years, we'll be doing this show and still talking about it. Probably
in 5 years, yeah, we'll be no closer to a pipeline. And meanwhile, the Liberals have put almost all their political capital on this because they bought the pipeline. They thought it was going to happen. It's not going to happen. Meanwhile, they've ticked off anyone who's on the activist side of the party who could put up with developing pipelines. If I meant carbon taxes, okay. Quid pro quo, that's fine. But now we own a pipeline. The expansion's not happening. There's blowback on the carbon tax. There's blowback from the NDP government in Alberta on the carbon tax, and there's no development on any front at all. And that's incredibly difficult to argue that you are, the party to best manage these kinds of situations when there's clearly a lot of mismanagement.
Except for the pipeline company shareholders, they did okay.
Yeah, Kinder Morgan's going to be fine.
Started with a laugh, ended with a laugh. We're going to be fine.
Yeah,
money.
Somewhere,
money.
There's someone with Kinder Morgan stock lighting up a cigar with a $100 bill right now. Every 3 seconds, some old guy that owns oil stock is lighting up a cigar with a $100 bill.
yeah, Canadian Tire $100 bill.
Oh, man.
Does that exist? I don't know.
Well, I think it's a card now. I think it's a points card.
Yeah, keep asking me if I have the card. No.
Yeah.
No, I don't have the card.
Yeah, don't get the card.
Give me the money.
I'll make my own Canadian Tire money. probably some people in the east end of the city wishing they could pay their fines with Canadian Tire money. If you're following along with Guelph Politico, you may have come across this story about driveway width. Some people have been getting enforcement fines and things for zoning infractions in regards to their bylaws. It seems to be something of a, I don't want to say epidemic, but it seems like that. It's kind of spreading. It seems to be spreading into the west end of town now and into the south end of town. But Councillor Dan Gibson of Ward 1 brought forward a notice of motion earlier in the summer. It will be debated and voted upon at the September 10th council meeting, which is this coming Monday. It seems that just from the town halls I've attended, hosted by Dan Gibson, in some comments online too, it seems like there's some battle lines drawn here, that there's a lot of people who are like, If a councillor doesn't vote for this, they are spitting in the face of their constituents, and it's
a disgrace to City Hall.
I mean, basically, it's not like they've been called traitors yet, but there are a lot of people who
Judas, charlatan.
Well, there are people post the this picture of the vote to refer the notice of motion to the September meeting. Three councillors who voted against it were Councillor Ault, Councillor Hofland, and Councillor Wettstein. And the caption accompanying the picture is always well, why would you vote against sending a motion to the next council meeting? Let's talk about it. And all that's missing is the hashtag traitor.
Bury them.
I understand, I went into these meetings, the first meeting back in June, incredibly skeptical about this.
That was one with 130 people. The first meeting had a ton.
It had to be more than, it had to be closer to 150 to 175.
Huh.
But it was a gym in, I can't remember which school in the East End, but it was a pretty full gym.
And that's, I went to the sale of Guelph Hydro meeting, nowhere near that number.
Mm-hmm.
Any condo meeting about, oh my God, here the condos come, which is also going to come up at council on September 10th.
Yeah.
and it's just sort of all met with a shrug. But man, you find somebody for their driveways, they're parking the wrong places too long, and they lose it. They absolutely explode. And I don't think Dan Gibson has been a bit of a voice of reason on this. I did look at the PowerPoint presentation on his website, But yeah, by the looks of it, this is his key election issue, and we'll probably do all right by it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this is the thing with our town, and looking at the arguments and the photos taken, and my neighborhood too, which isn't, I'm in Ward 1, but I'm not in this area. I'm in the old ward, St. Patrick's Ward. And, you know, nothing conforms, right?
Right.
And I think this is the problem. And was it at the meetings, did you get a sense, because I have been sort of hearing this through the vine, but I know this to be a fact, that bylaws are generally a complaint-driven exercise.
They are complaint-driven.
Right? So it's, if you want to be petty with your neighbor, if somebody pisses you off, or the 12 students in their house piss you off,
right,
where they're parking or with their shenanigans,
right,
then you just call the bylaw. Right. So do you think that was the trigger for this? Because it was, things were fine. The
yeah.
houses they're talking about are like 70s, 80s. This is a 20, 30 year thing. And then some of the newer ones where they build that, the path adjacent, which seems to be the problem, is that some people are sticking a tire on that. And it's like, oh, they're parking on the pathway. I'm going to call that in. Is
right.
it an overzealous person or people have triggered this whole thing, or is it just, is this even really a problem? That's the main
thing. Well,
it's
definitely a problem.
No, it's a problem, but to what degree?
Right.
You know, are people parking all willy-nilly every which way on the lawns? I mean, I remember seeing it in the past when, usually with students, and it was when I was a student, I didn't have a car, but, you know, you'd see it, like there'd be a car parked weirdly or on a lawn because there was nowhere to park, right?
Right.
So, and well, it's becoming...
You touched on a number of things. First of all,
yeah.
I think the patient zero for this was that somebody made a complaint against a neighbor that was like a legitimate complaint that was like on the basis of like that person was doing something like committing a serious infraction. And in revenge, that person, not knowing exactly which one of their neighbors reported them,
used
reported
the nuclear
went nuclear.
Come look at all these cars. Yeah.
This seems to be predominantly affecting the newer areas, so not even like this, the 80s and the 90s builds, like the 2000s,
and they're
2010
tight.
Builds.
It's tight. You look
they're
at those;
tight.
It's tight. Everything's
right.
tight.
And
everybody's
and
got big honking cars, Fords and
right.
SUVs, and they're just.
It's not even necessarily that. It's that, you know, you have.
Sorry, Ford. I didn't want to single you out, but there's a ton of F-150s in town. I've noticed
we've ditched enough to at least one Ford today.
You got it.
But
he's going to be calling us.
Well, he knows where we are.
He follows
us on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's the newer developments, the tight townhouse developments where there's a garage and a driveway, and so there's enough room for a car in a garage and a car in the driveway. There's just enough room in the garage for the car. It doesn't take into account
the stuff.
The bicycles, the strollers, the carts for the garbage. And you know, there are a lot of people who talk about, like, we have a family car. I mean, it's not necessarily people like, we have a car for every member of our family. It's people like, we have a family car. But the husband or the wife, you know, has a job where it requires them to drive a company car.
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody like a handyman or a taxi, let's say.
Yeah, tradespeople.
Tradespeople.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's one level of difficulty. And I was talking to somebody at the last town hall last week about this. It's like what's happened in the East End is that it's a perfect storm of high density, quick build, and the expectation that transit was going to keep up. And that didn't happen.
Hmm.
So there was one man there who was close to my neck of the woods, who said, you know, he drives to Mississauga every day, and he got dinged. He has one of these sort of, like, walkways between his driveway and his house, so he...
That's the picture in the PowerPoint, isn't it, where it's, it bleeds one...
I don't know if that's his house,
right.
But, I mean, that's the example. And he got dinged by bylaw, and he was talking about how he drives back and forth to his job in Mississauga every day, and I was like, well, you know, my reptile brain, my first thought was, like, you know, there's a GO bus that goes from Guelph to Mississauga every hour. But, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I recognize that's not necessarily practical. But, I mean, that's part of the concern. That's like a new thing.
It's the right to the door thing. I mean, all the
sure.
parking in Mississauga, if you have a job there, is generally free.
Yeah.
Right.
Whereas
when I worked in Toronto, like, I would have loved if the train had stayed, I would have gone. It's not about me, though, or my driveway, which is probably nonconforming. So I'm not going to tell you what street I live on, but... you know, just as a cursory glance the other night, I'm like, that one, no, that one, no. But if you're following the criteria, it's like, yeah, nothing right. conforms.
Right.
These 100-year-old houses.
And that's another example is that, you know, there was one woman at the June Town Hall who's, you know, bought her house years ago with the driveway as it is. And then bylaw comes around and is like, oh, your driveway's not, you know, according to the norms. And she didn't know. And she just sold her house. So she's like moving. Hmm. And this new person is stuck with a driveway that they had nothing to do with.
Yeah.
And but they're stuck with a bill of goods. And that was something interesting that came up is that, you know, driveway, you know, when you go to the city and you're making changes to your home, like if you're adding like a room or you want to turn your garage into a cottage house or something, you need permits to do that. Don't need a permit to do anything with your driveway, though.
Yeah, and people just generally do it. It's almost the same with fences, too. I mean, the city has like a fence line inspection team, and I'm sure that gets lively if, you know, they see you going into the yard or looking over your fence there. It'd be like, I guarantee that not one fence, in my area at least, conforms to any...
And yeah, those people...
If it does, it was an accident that it ended up on the property line.
Those fence people are like the Ghostbusters at the beginning of Ghostbusters where they're not getting any calls. And then they finally get a call and Janine's like, we've got one.
I survived the fence wars of 2018.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I still find it hard to believe that this is the... Not the issue, but of all the other issues that are sort of coming out now that the election... is kind of getting rolling and people are having their rollouts, that this is hot.
It is hot.
And it's I don't know.
I know, but I guess you have to...
You know what I'm saying, right? It's like, of all the issues in town.
I think...
My driveway.
I think it's like, you know, once you're drafted, you're kind of in it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and it's not a slam dunk. I think a lot of people, just like on the basis of compassion, be like, you know what, let's give people a break, you know, because there's clearly a bit of escalation
here. By the sounds of it. It sounds like things, they're just like, we're not, the bylaws aren't going to do anything until the 10th of September.
Right.
You can be in City Hall for that one because you got a long night ahead of you.
Yeah, that's going to be a long night.
Approvals of builds, this thing.
That's the thing that nobody's talking about is that there's like all these things that like on their own would like because there's the 14 story one on Wyndham South, there's the L building that they want to build at Janefield,
the one the Wyndham one's near me, but yeah,
there's another one in the South End that's coming back, so you know it's a very busy meet, but this is going to suck up all the energy and it's going to come down to I don't think it's going to come down to whether or not how persuasive the people in favor of the motion are going to be. I think it's going to come down to what the opposition looks like, and there is opposition from the old university neighborhood group and other groups sort of like in the core area whom this doesn't really affect and whom want to support keeping the bylaw because it was sort of to them it was originally kind of intended, which is getting back to that student housing situation. It's like you have a house with like 12 students and maybe 12 cars. What to do about that? And that's not nearly the problem anymore. That it was so much as you see in the West End, you have multi-generational homes and things. Anyway, we'll have to leave
that
there. Too
many cars overall, yeah.
Well, that's one man's opinion.
Yes. The opinions expressed are those of me and not of Adam or the station or the internet.
Speaking of the station, we're going to try and start having our candidate interviews next week with people running for council. So stay tuned for who we're going to be having in the next couple of weeks and who you're going to be able to hear from. We, of course, have Cam Guthrie himself coming in October 18th, and I'm just waiting for a day to be picked by Aggie Milner so she can come by again. You can stay connected to all that at opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on the Twitters, and you can find this and other episodes of Open Sources on the Guelph Podcast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. You can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to GuelphPolitico.ca.
Oh, yeah. Changing her up. Right on. And I'm Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. I wish I would blog there, but let's call it writer's block.
Sure, that works.
We'll call that this week. Something else next week.
We've got more great programming for you next year on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio, and we'll be back here next week for more open sources Thursdays at 5 p.m., and we'll see you then.